Okay, I'd like to call the meeting to order. And Lisa, can you read the script, please?
Yes, welcome. If you lose connection at any time, reconnect by clicking the link in your email invite. Committee members, please activate your video and keep it on for the duration of the meeting. Use the raise hand feature if you wish to speak, ask questions, or request a roll call vote. Staff, please activate your video when you are speaking. Use the raise hand feature when you are asked a question. And for members of the public, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted until called upon by the chair. Please do not use your video. Chair, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Lisa. At this time, we please do the roll call of commissioners.
Yes, Commissioner Claude Gilmore.
Present.
Gilmore present. Commissioner Dwayne Gray.
Present.
Gray present. Commissioner Greg Reed.
Present.
Reed present. Commissioner Madeline O'Connor.
Present.
O'Connor present. Commissioner Mary Strickland.
Present.
Strickland present. Alder Tag Evers.
Here.
Evers present. And Alder Isidore Knox Jr. Is not present at this time. Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to have a motion and a second for the approval of our minutes from our February 13th meeting.
Move to
Sir. Did you move to approve, Commissioner O'Connor?
Yes, sorry about that.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Great
Great.
second.
It's been moved and seconded that the minutes from February 13th be approved. We'll consider this a unanimous vote unless there are any objection. Hearing none, motion approved. Are there any public comments?
There are no public registrants for this meeting.
Yeah, thank you. Are there any communications?
Just two notes. It is possible that we will need a special board meeting next month. The bid for the final phase of work at Village on Park to do all of the stormwater and rebuild the parking lots, that bid closes at 2 o'clock on the day of your meeting. So it's quite possible that we'll need more than 2 hours to review the bids and make sure they're complete. So we would schedule a short phone call meeting for probably the following week to approve bids, assuming that we get acceptable bids for that work. But we'll work to schedule that with all of you as we get closer. And then just to let you know that if we get word about government shutdown or effects to any of our programs, we'll reach out to you about that, but we don't know anything that's not in the newspaper at this point. But if we do get notice, we will reach out in by email to all of you to let you know what's happening. So that's
Appreciate
it.
that. All right, thank you. Are there any disclosures or recusals? Hearing none, we have three items on the consent agenda. At this time, I'd like to have a motion and a second for approval of the consent agenda.
I so move.
This is Mary, second.
It's been moved and seconded that the consent agenda noted be approved, and I would consider this to be a unanimous vote. Unless there are any objection. Hearing none, motion approved. We have a couple of discussion items. The first discussion items is CDE Resolution 4650.
Yep, so this is a resolution to enter into a contract to project-based vouchers in a development located at formerly 1202 South Park Street. Address has changed. It's an Alder Evers district. So this is a joint venture between the City of Madison and a private developer to build tax credit-funded housing that'll serve a handful of the units we set aside for individuals who are exiting the foster system. And these are vouchers. These aren't general vouchers. These are a specific type of voucher that would be put onto those units that are serving those individuals. So the CDA staff have been working with city staff for a number of years to pull this project together. We can answer any questions. Sadie's here if you have specific questions about the type of voucher.
Are there any comments or questions on this from the commissioners? I can't tell any hands. You have to let me know if someone has to make a comment.
Commissioner O'Connor has her
hand up. Okay, Commissioner O'Connor.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I'm sure you've answered this before, but are they being moved from another site, the vouchers?
Sadie, chime in. I don't think so. I don't think we've ever used these vouchers. They're very specific ones we were awarded.
We're not taking them from anywhere else.
They're new vouchers.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay.
When would they be deployed? What's the timeline?
So the project is looking to break ground in the next couple of months, and then so probably a year-ish before units would be occupied. Oh, well, that's year two.
Okay, thanks for the information.
And the location of this is, where's the adjacent street from it? I just needed to, just for a reference point.
It is...
It's actually exactly where Olin dead ends.
Yes, thank you.
And so right now the city owns that parcel. And as Matt said, yep, Community Development Division and CDA have been working together then on the project. And Community Development Division is providing a loan to the developer.
Oh, okay. All right, that helps. I just kind of wanted to kind of get the geography on that.
And then Commissioner Gray has his hand raised as well.
Go ahead, Commissioner Gray.
Thank you, Chairman. So thank you again for bringing this to our attention. So with these project-based vouchers for the project known as Park Loafs, so how did you guys come up with the idea of specifically using these particular vouchers for individuals that's exiting foster care?
Sure, I'll take that one. So when we originally got American Rescue Plan money through the pandemic, the mayor asked us to really focus on how we could use some of those money as a community benefit. So we knew we wanted to put some of that money into housing development. And we also knew that we owned this site. I formerly actually worked at a juvenile detention facility. So I had connections and talked a lot with our Dane County partners of what was the specific barriers we were seeing right now, especially with youth. And one of the things that they found was youth that were exiting out of the foster care system, even though they had vouchers, were having a very hard time still securing housing in our community. They lacked things like cosigners. They lacked rental history and so forth. And so in collaboration with CDD, CDA, and the county who operates that foster care system, we thought if the city had the opportunity to do a request for proposals for a development where we are being very specific in the tenant selection and the types of vouchers that we wanted to see on a parcel of land that we owned, that was the direction that we wanted to take, is making sure that we use this opportunity to put into the RFP the specific barrier of youth exiting the foster care system and making sure they had access to units to use the vouchers.
And these vouchers can only be used for two situations. One is where the family has a housing issue that could cause children to be taken out of the home, or for youth aging out of foster care. Nope, that's wrong. Okay, you correct me.
So we have the Family Unification Project vouchers. So there's two sets of those. One can be for families that are needed housing to be reunited, but then there's the youth program. So these are specific to the youth that are aging out of the foster care system. So these will be, I think, Lynette, one bedrooms, two bedrooms, because those youth may have a child, but it'll just be for the youth.
Thank you for that clarification as well. So basically, individuals that's in foster care, that's aging out, can live there, but also if they have a child, is that child welcome as well if they could prove that they're the caretaker for that child?
Yep, we purposely made sure that there were two bedroom units as part of this development as well. Again, okay. Talking with Dane County and getting an understanding of the barriers that people okay. sometimes have, we understand that some people may have children.
Oh, good, good. Would there be any barriers if the foster care that's involved in this program, if they got certain type of felonies, would they be eliminated from this program? Do you got any criteria that would mandate that if you got maybe like a specific felony offense, you would not be eligible for this type of housing?
No, I would. So when we create the tenant selection plan and that's all decided, we have the options to decide what our screening criteria may be. There's a couple of things that are mandatory that HUD says you cannot have somebody be in your program. For example, if somebody's a lifetime registered sex offender, we can't just say, oh, we're waiving that. So for most of these project-based vouchers that have some other support systems there, we've usually mm-hmm. done just the mandatory screening. And so usually for those, they would be more likely to not have any issues.
And then I'll just add also in 2023, the city through CDD, we have created tenant selection, what we call best practices and now standards, that if any development is receiving city money, we are trying and we are pushing to have low barrier tenant selection plans in place as well. So this is new for us of the city actually getting involved in what that tenant selection process is. But because there is city funds also in connection to the development, we are always looking at how we can like reduce some of the denials that we see in properties.
Okay, thank you. Any other
Alder Evers has his hand raised.
Alder Evers, go ahead.
Yeah, it's not a question so much. Well, maybe it's a question, but when we're talking about young people aging out of foster care, they're often still minor, you know, they could be minors, they could be 17, 18 years old, 16 years old. Is it that the case, generally speaking?
What the county is reporting to us is most individuals that are moving out of the foster care system would be 18 and eligible to sign a lease.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think in most instances, these are young people coming out of a structured family situation. And we're trying to prevent them from getting involved in the criminal justice system. That's the very reason why we want to provide this service, because people aging out of foster care, statistics show, sometimes flail around before they get settled into a productive life. So that's a real identified need in our community, from what I understand. So I'm very, very pleased this is moving forward in District 13 at this particular site.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? And I appreciate the presentation. And at this time, I will ask for a motion and a second for this resolution. Is there a motion for approval?
Commissioner Gray, I make a motion that we move resolution 4650.
Yes, you made the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Then moving second at resolution number 4650. Will be approved and we'll consider this a unanimous vote unless there are any objection. Hearing none, motion approved. Next item is CDE resolution 4651.
So this is a resolution to approve SuperNet as the provider of telecommunications at the Village on Park ramp. So this would be for the payment systems, security, mm-hmm. those sorts of things, and say 5-year contract to start with options to renew on top of it.
And could you just expand a little bit about what that entails in terms of the service?
Chris, do you want to chime in?
Excuse me. Yes, good evening, commissioners. So the Village on Park parking structure will need internet to it, such that the hub parking equipment that we will be installing per contract the board approved last month, and that internet service is needed such that, you know, the software with that equipment gets updated on a regular basis, and it will also support the security cameras that will be going into the parking structure, which is the next resolution I can brief you on. So that's why this resolution is before you this evening. It's for the fiber install from Hughes Place, from a manhole there into the parking structure, and then also into the Village on Park building. Okay. And then after that installation is complete, the five-year term will commence for the internet services per the rates that are identified in the resolution. And then the term of that agreement will auto-renew on an annual basis unless the CDA elects to terminate the agreement. And SuperNet did give us very favorable rates, and therefore, you know, we're bringing this resolution to the board this evening.
Appreciate
any questions?
Appreciate that, the breakdown. Are there any questions related to this resolution?
Commissioner Gray, is his hand raised?
Go ahead, Commissioner Gray.
Thank you, Ms. Cobol, for giving us an explanation on this. And so, SuperNet, this is the first time I actually really heard of this particular fiber company. So with that being said, is this a fiber company that's affiliated with any other networks such as AT&T or Charter? Can you provide a little more information on this particular aspect of it?
Yes, they are one of the approved MUFIN network providers, and the city of Madison has an agreement with them, throughout the city. And there's other approved MUFIN network providers, such as Wind Network, and there's a couple other providers. So it's a select group that have the ability to pull fiber from the right of way. So they're, okay. Yeah, they're a little different than AT&T and other providers in that respect.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for related to this resolution?
Commissioner Reed, yeah. Is this Andreas?
Go ahead.
I do.
Go ahead, Commissioner Reed.
Chris, if the agreement expires, I guess the question I have is it SuperNet's responsibility to remove their wires and their equipment, or will they keep everything intact and somebody else could step in?
So that's one of the items we discussed with them, and actually City IT, you know, helped Jim and I on this resolution and understanding, you know, this contract. So at the end of the term of the agreement, right now, SuperNet will own that fiber. Even though we're paying for the install, they will own it, and then we will ask, you know, either they can require to, you know, keep it, or, you know, they're going to take it with them. Most likely what they'll do is take their hardware with them and leave the fiber there. So that's a really good question, but we really needed guidance from City IT on that. And that will be discussed in the right of entry agreement that we're still negotiating right now with SuperNet, but that's the basis of, you know, how things work with fiber. And actually City IT, you know, said there's lots of, you know, if we negotiated to keep ownership of that fiber, there's a lot of responsibilities when you do that. So they said, you know, let's just, you know, keep it given what they want in that respect.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions for this resolution? If not, I'll ask for a motion and a second for approval.
This is Mary. I move approval.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Gray, second.
It's been moved and seconded that CDA Resolution 4651 be approved, and we'll consider this a unanimous vote unless there are any objection. Hearing none, motion approved. Next resolution is Resolution 4653.
So, in a similar vein, we've gone out to find a vendor for providing security cameras for the ramp, as well as the related software license to manage and monitor those security cameras. And if you have questions, Chris can give you much more detail.
So basically, IBS has a contract with the city. They were selected through a selection process, and Jim was able to get IBS to, agree to terms that are in the city's agreement with them for favorable installation terms of the roughly, I believe, 29 cameras that will go in the garage and three exterior locations. So this is a sole source contract. And there's favorable pricing in that, the city contract. We're piggybacking on those favorable installation terms.
Okay, I appreciate that. And is this a 5-year thing as well, or a 1-year thing?
Right now, after the installation of the cameras, there's a 1-year software license agreement. So that will have to be negotiated in the future.
The license will be?
Yes.
Negotiated. The beginning, though, the license will be held by IBC?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. And what was the total amount for this particular contract? Just a reference point.
It was 63,000.
Okay.
664.
Okay, appreciate that. Are there any questions from the commissioners on this particular resolution? Hearing none, I ask for a motion and approval for this resolution.
I'll move approval.
It's been moved for approval. Is there a second?
I'll second. It's Greg.
It's been moved and seconded that Resolution 4653 be approved. Then we'll consider this a unanimous vote unless there are any objection. Hearing none, motion approved. Last item is the report on the Housing Authority operations.
Lynette, Lauren, interview.
So I'm going to have Sadie and Lauren do the presentation. So we'll start with Sadie.
Okay, looking there. Oh, I'm going to send a request to share.
You should be good.
Okay. Thank you. All right, can everybody see the CDA Section 8 monthly report? Okay.
Yes.
Yes, okay. So not a whole lot has changed from January to February since the last time we met. We're still holding strong at our voucher utilization rate. Our housing assistance payments dollars are about the same. And one thing that we had brought up at a different or a previous meeting was our project-based vouchers that were leased have been pretty low, and that is due to when Tree Lane and Rethke closed. I can report out that we have started assisting and moving people into now Enzo, which had been Rethke Terrace, and Amphora, which had been Tree Lane. So hopefully for March, when I report back next month, those numbers will have bumped up quite a bit. Between those two properties, we do have a total of 47 project-based vouchers. So we will see that utilization increase over the next few months. And that's about it.
Questions on utilization on this particular report?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
I'm just curious, are the vouchers, the family unification vouchers for the Park Street site, are those reflected here somewhere?
They are. So if you look at the top part, it says home ownership and then family unification, FUP. Mm-hmm. Those FUP could be, like Matt was talking about, FUP for families that are trying to have their children reunited with them. Or it could be the FUP youth, which is specifically what we're putting into that, the park lofts. So we have a total of 100 of those vouchers. So right now, apart from those 11, we are utilizing 68 of them right now.
And is there a reason we're not using the additional, like 30?
Just with referrals, and it is within the whole same bucket of funds. We also, we're like the VASH, the veterans, those are in the same bucket of funds. And so any of those ones, we're trying to make sure that we're keeping our utilization as high as we can with the amount of money that we have.
Okay.
Other questions they may have? I just had one question. Could you just clarify what are portable vouchers? I was not quite clear on this. Is that something interchangeable?
So portable vouchers are folks that have a CDA voucher and they have ported or transferred their voucher to a different housing authority. The majority are with the Dane County Housing Authority, and that housing authority has the option to bill our agency. And so what happens is they pay the local landlord there, they send us a bill each month, and we reimburse them. So when that's the case, we get to utilize that payment and that unit month lease is under our utilization. So as of right now, we're billing for 63 vouchers. Okay. Or I'm sorry, we're being billed for 63 vouchers.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Gray has his hand raised.
Go ahead, Commissioner Gray.
Thank you. So as I'm looking at the Veterans Affairs Supported Housing, which is primarily, is this funded by the federal government? And is there any information that you all can provide us relevant to if any changes have taken place or if there's any discussion around what will happen if monies is pulled from this particular area from these vouchers by the federal government?
I can take this one. So I think so we're discussing that. So at this time right now, we have not received any communication of our 2025 budget or if there's going to be a decrease of funds. We are actively making sure we're watching the budget and so forth. We are, if there is, we're creating a plan. If there is, let's say, a significant cut from HUD, what that means. We're doing that, one, for advocacy purposes as well, to make sure that we are getting in front of all of our appropriate, Congress individuals and so forth, to make sure that they understand the importance of HUD funds, and also to kind of make sure we know if there is a cut in funds, how many families would be affected. And I think we will create a couple different scenarios, such as if there is like a 5% cut, or if there is a significant cut, what does that mean?
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? None. Well, thank you for that particular report. And could you go ahead and provide the second report?
Good evening, everybody. Let's see here. I'm going to share my screen. So this first report is our occupancy report. So we report about 2 months behind, or 2 months behind. So this is the report for January. We're looking at a little bit of a dip in our occupancy level for the month of January. And these are, this top section here is our public housing units. And then the bottom section is our Truax PBV units, and then Parkside and Caribous. So the decrease is due a little bit to the fact that most folks aren't moving around in the wintertime. So we didn't have a lot of people coming in to see units and things like that. So this is the, we have the goal of 98.5% occupancy in the public housing program. So even though we have a little bit of a dip, the overall occupancy level is right about 97.2%. So we're getting closer to our goal here. We'll continue to get those units leased up and get maintenance in them to turn them around quickly. Are there any questions on occupancy?
Any questions from commissioners on this?
Commissioner Gray has his hand raised.
Go ahead, Commissioner Gray.
Hi, Lauren. How's it going?
How you doing?
Hi. Well, look. So I remember the assistant director discussing that there's like 3,000 people on a waiting list for CDA housing. And so I just, you know, that's just an extraordinary amount of people on a waiting list. So I'm just wondering, when you think about that, and when you think about this occupancy report, is there any correlationship to those two, or are they just two separate entities that CDA is addressing at this time?
So we measure our occupancy on a monthly basis. So as of the first day of the month, we look at how many units are vacant. And that just means that as of the first day of that month, let's say, for example, AMP 200 in East has 162 units. On the first day of the month, they had 11 vacancies, and 9 of them were taken offline for remodeling. So there's 2 actually vacant units that HUD doesn't, the HUD counts against us. That on the first of the month, we have our maintenance staff go in and get the unit turned over. So they're doing that for each of those vacancies that come up open on the first of the month. As soon as those units are ready, we have approved applicants from that waiting list that are contacted to come in. They have the opportunity to see the unit that's available and then determine when they're able to move in. So they do correlate. It's just, we have to get a unit ready before we can move somebody in. So it takes a little bit of an overlap there.
Okay, thank you. Well, go ahead to report number 2.
Commissioner Strickland has.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
I just have a question. Have we had any evictions over the last couple months?
So we have had evictions. I can't go into too much detail due to privacy reasons. So evictions can be for behavior or rent. I do have the delinquency report for the next one.
What's the number on these evictions? Are we talking about 5, 10, 15?
It's definitely not over 10.
So this is the beginning, since there was a period where we had a kind of moratorium on evictions. So this is the beginning of this, you know, where we're starting back up with evictions, correct?
We are sending off some tenants who have not abided by their repayment agreements to the attorney's office to move into the court process.
So has anybody left the apartment or been evicted from the apartment?
We have had evictions where people have left, but I can't go into details on that.
Okay, but you're saying they're less than 10?
I would say yes.
Okay, I think we just need to keep appraised of that information.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions before we move to the second part of the report? I'll go ahead with the second part of the report.
All right. The next one is So this report looks a little bit different, or a lot of bit different from the last time we looked at a delinquency report. Back in January, we had presented the information, and we had some feedback that it was hard to understand, and maybe there was a little too much information, maybe some that wasn't necessary in there that made it confusing to read. We came up with a little bit different way to present the information, and this is what we came up with. So I would appreciate if anyone has additional feedback, if you wouldn't mind sharing that with me, that would be appreciated. What we did here is we have residents that are currently past due on rent. So they could be 13 days past due on rent, or up to 89 days past due. So these folks are not necessarily at risk for losing their housing. They're folks that we are working with to try to get them into repayment agreements and referring them out to organizations that might be able to help them get rent paid up and things like that. So we're looking at a total of 81 households that are in that group. And the delinquent or outstanding amount of rent is just over $30,000. And that I would say is pretty typical for this time of the month in any month during the year. So this data today is actually a lot more current than in the past months when we've showed you these reports. We were able to run the data's current as of yesterday. So we had been doing current as of the end of the month prior to this board meeting. So you'll see a little bit of a difference in the current amount that's past due there. The next section talks about who is in repayment agreements. So all these folks in this section here have signed repayment agreements and are paying those agreements as agreed. So they are continuing to pay their normal monthly rent plus the repayment agreement amount on time. Following all of that, that's our ideal situation for somebody who's past due. This next section is our at-risk group. So these are the folks who have signed repayment agreements or have not responded to our outreach to sign repayment agreements. Sorry, they've signed repayment agreements, but are not paying on them according to what they agreed to, or we've reached out and they have not responded to our offers of assistance to connect them to options or sign those repayment agreements. In this group, we have 28 of them. And the total amount that they are behind is just over $100,000. So that's our new report style. Are there any questions about how the information is presented, or any questions at all, really?
Well, I'd like to say that I like the layout of the new report. It's much more concise and clear. Only question I have is for those that are at risk that are not abiding by the agreement, what is the threshold or cutoff about how long they're going to be there before you move to the next step? I know you can't get into specifics, but you have to have a benchmark.
So we're looking at between 30 to 60 days from now is when they would be moved into that next step.
And they get a lot of prior notice before the axe falls, correct?
Yep. So in the private market, landlords give a 5-day notice for unpaid rent. So here in public, in multifamily housing, we are doing their 30-day notices. So they receive a 30-day notice before we move to any next step on that.
Okay. Yeah, this is much better. I appreciate this. Questions and comments from the commissioners?
Commissioner Gray and Commissioner Strickland both have hands up.
Go ahead, Commissioner Strickland.
You're muted, Commissioner Strickland.
Okay, I agree. I like this report a lot better. I just want to clarify the total number of households, 204. Is that out of approximately 750 public housing units?
Yeah, it's a little bit less than 750. I'd say about 720-ish.
So that's a big number of problems out of the total.
It is. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions from commissioners?
Commissioner Gray, his hand raised.
Go ahead, Commissioner Gray.
Thank you, Chairman Gilmore. First and foremost, I just want to say thank you for CDA for just kind of continuing to take into consideration some of the concerns that, you know, I pointed out as well as other commissioners relevant to the previous chart. And to me, the issue is not about wanting to know how many people are being evicted and their names and their social security numbers and stuff. But I do think it's fair to kind of know as a commissioner, how many people are being evicted from CDA property. And that's not for my own personal reasons, but it kind of helped to kind of look at this delinquent child in a way that says something have went terribly wrong with this amount of individuals not being responsible and being held accountable for paying their rent. And I just don't believe that this is just an issue that's relevant to just the residents. I think the bigger issue is that when you have this amount of people that's not paying rent, someone have to redefine what's the purpose, you know, of CDA. Is it just to kind of not hold people accountable? And I'm kind of more concerned about that aspect of it, because even I think this chart was here with this delinquent payment before COVID even took place. I kind of been on the board for 4 years. And so I just want to know, I'm probably one of the most committed commissioners to making sure that residents have a place to stay. But I also know that accountability and responsibility is something that residents really understand, that they have to pay their rent or they're not going to be able to remain, obviously, in housing. So I'm very pleased that we're kind of looking at this from a different standpoint, and we're kind of moving in a different direction where we're all beginning to kind of be on the same page. Thank you, CDA, again, for all your hard work and working with us on this information with this chart.
Alder Evers has his hand raised too.
Evers, go ahead.
Yeah, and one is a comment, the other is a question. To me, these numbers really aren't all that startling. We have 28 out of roughly 728 who are at risk, which is less than 4%. Yes, we have some people who are behind in their rent, and that could be anywhere from 30 to 90 days. We have a lot of people, 95, who have been behind but are under a repayment agreement, which means they're working with us. I would imagine most housing projects of any size would be happy with just 4% of the overall tenants being, you know, in a sense, trouble or problematic. So I don't find this unsettling in any regard. It seems that we're doing a good job of keeping on top of it, and we're communicating with people. In these challenging times right now, I don't think our numbers are actually all that exceptional. I could be wrong about that, but I doubt if they're exceptional even in the history of CDA housing, that these, or in social or low income housing across the country. I don't think we're outside of the norm, in other words. I do see, though, at Parkside, which is in District 13, there's an unusually large number there of 10 residents who are at risk. Do we know anything in particular about what's going on there at Parkside that would have such a high number in that particular location?
I would say it's probably that as we're getting through offering repayment agreements and reaching out to folks, there are a lot of neighbors who are really close and they kind of all speak with each other. And one neighbor says, "Well, I haven't paid my rent," and they didn't do anything. And then the next neighbor says, "Okay, we'll see how far I can get with that as well." I think it's probably a lot of that.
Well, in that case, then I think perhaps having a meeting of some sort, getting neighbors and people in and saying, "Hey, you are in fact at risk, and we are offering repayment agreements. We're offering outside help. Where you may qualify for a grant to be able to get you caught up, or some kind of donation, a church or some organization." But I think that's actually insightful that there may be kind of a collaboration among people who feel like it hasn't been sufficiently enforced in that particular building, and so they're kind of banding together and trying to take advantage of that. So, and if you'd like me to participate in that as the alder and talk to these folks and say how much we value their presence on the triangle and would like to see them stay, I'm glad to participate and be part of that conversation.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Other comments? I'd like to say, yeah, go
Commissioner
ahead.
Strickland has her hand raised.
Go ahead, Commissioner Strickland.
I just wanted to ask, can we compare our numbers? Are there any, is there industry information on other housing authorities across the country for cities our size that we can compare our numbers with in terms of delinquency?
I don't actually know that information. I know that we can compare with occupancy, but I'm not sure about the delinquency and rent.
But I mean, that would be interesting
information
look
into it.
To compare to see how we, what kind of job we're doing compared to other cities our size across the country that have housing authorities. I would be surprised if that information is not available through HUD or some trade association.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I think I really appreciate that. I think that we do need to have some industry norm that we can look at to see how we compare. And I think I agree with, that Alder about the issue is that, we may not be that far out of balance. I do think that this report attests to the fact we have to do due diligence and people need to know that we're serious about this matter and that there have to be some accountability. So I would applaud the CDA to continue in this effort to be more, continue to be more assertive in terms of where you're going and also providing all the support you need to do that. So I think this is moving in the right direction. Lives and people's lives are very complicated and very difficult sometimes. And we know we understand that. But we want to make sure that we're doing a good job with the public's money that we have. Any other comments on this report?
Commissioner Gray has his hand raised.
Go ahead, Commissioner Gray.
Yeah. I just wanted to just add, because I do know that, when I look at my contract with CDA, it really specifies that I have to pay my rent. I mean, and I really don't want to make this about CDA. I really want to make this about individuals being responsible and being accountable for their decisions. And so I think the more that we kind of put the spin on it, that there's other things that we need to do. I just think if we let this policy kind of work and let the policy take effect, that people will, after we go through these different areas and make these transitions from this building to the new buildings, we can certainly clear up some of these delinquency payments. Now, I think CDA still will be taking a hit. I think maybe $65,000, according to the previous assistant director, but I just want to see the bleeding stop bleeding. And I, just knowing residents and even the ones on a fixed income are usually pretty good at paying their rent. So again, I just think if there's a policy in place that will support the rent payments, it's going to make this process much easier. Like, I just want to add that as well. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Any other comments? If not, I really want to thank the report you guys provided and continued efforts you're making here. We thank you for that. Matt, are there any other items that we need to address?
There are not.
Okay, well, thank you all very much for this meeting. I will ask for a motion for adjournment.
Commissioner Gray, make a motion that we close the meeting.
Second. It's been moved and seconded that we're now in adjournment, and we will see you guys later. Take care. Have a good evening.
Actually,
happy St. Patrick's Day.